Hey everybody, today's episode features Antanas Kavaliauskas. Antanas is a former player of mine, if I may say so. We worked together at the Eurobasket in 2015 and won a silver medal together. We worked together at the Rio Olympics. He was a really fun player to watch as he was getting older and more experienced. And today we talked all about his experiences from going to the States, starting off at a junior college, coming back to Europe and playing, building his player career. We also talked about his transition mainly to retirement and starting his new career as currently being the player development director at Wake Forest University. And we just had a good time talking and remembering his time in Lithuania of when he transferred from one rival to another and had a whole bunch of stories to tell about his past in the States as well as in Europe. So please enjoy this episode. And if you're done with it and you enjoyed it, please subscribe to this channel. Also, please subscribe to all the audio platforms that you prefer. And talk to you soon. All right, Antanas.
Hey, hey.
What's up? We're going to talk English today.
Sounds good to me, man. It's definitely not a foreign language to me anymore, so.
Yeah, you know, the joke I wanted to start with is, you know, two Lithuanians don't meet at a bar, but they meet at a podcast and they speak English. and that's the joke. I just got to make sure the joke is not on me.
Right. So what are you trying to say?
You're gonna ace it. I know. I just got to make sure that I'm not gonna embarrass myself here because you're living.
That is the last thing I want to do is for both of us to get embarrassed. Definitely.
No, neither one will embarrass each other. So, do you have a nickname in the States?
Yes, they call me AK. Plain and simple.
It should be patented by now. I mean, we have two AKs internationally. Now you're the third one. So
yeah, I guess so. Well, I couldn't go by Coach K because some other guy already took that. So
yeah, I heard that before. I can't remember who it was, but I had a nickname for you in the terms of Tony Montana.
Montana. All right. I could deal with that.
Tony, yeah, you got to clean it up. So now for you, you know, like I'm doing a series now on ex-players and talking about retirement. So the bulk of our discussion will be more about retirement and the path to it and the path after it. Mm-hmm. But before we get into it, I wanted to get a little bit back into your backstory of how you came to the States and what struggles you went through early on, because your path was not easy and you went literally through the whole progression from junior college to Division I. You started off then in Europe also at a medium level, and then you went all the way up to EuroLeague and national team level. But I was wondering the first path to going to Barton Community College, and how it was of making that choice, how you came about it, and what obstacles did you deal with the most early on? What were the biggest challenges?
Well, it all started when the at that time LKAL team Statiba lost most of its players, and I was playing for basically a second division, second team. And I got moved up and played for them in the playoffs. And we played against Šilutė in the playoffs. And Stepas Kyris saw me and called me on the way back to Vilnius from Šilutė. And he asked me if I wanted to go play in the States. And I said yes immediately because I knew at that time there wasn't anything for me that I could find in Lithuania. I was tall, skinny, you know, with no name, just finished the basketball academy. And so, yeah, grades weren't great. But somehow, some way, I managed to get into a Barton County Community College where coach at that time, Coach Supi Campbell, he coached a well-known Lithuanian. It's Robertas Javtokas's brother, Arturas. So the first practice I remember I had Robertas Javtokas's jersey on from Rytas that I admired at the time really, really much, and I wanted to be like him. So, but and yeah, so went there, speaking no English, nothing, just kind of leap of faith, and it all worked out.
No English at all, huh? When you came first, so did you have to take extra courses to get the grades for to play?
It's junior college, man.
I never went. I guess that's a one-word answer. It's junior college. Anything goes.
Junior college, yep. No, but I remember I had to take English 101 for foreign speakers, and I had to sing ABCs. I had to learn about all of the beautiful language that English is.
You came a long way, and I read also in the beautiful world of Google that JP Batista was also there, and he was the one helping you with adaptation and any kind of questions or struggles you had. What were the biggest things he helped you with? What were the most useful advice that he gave you during that time?
Oh man, he was the guy that just took me under his wing. He was in the same situation that I was a year ago, basically, when you played for Northwestern Nebraska, I believe. So he took me under his wing and, you know, basically would wake me up 6:30 in the morning and he'd chill, you know, let's go lift weights. Because I was at the time 6'10", 200 pound, you know, bleach blonde hair boy, you know, and I came into the world of real men, and junior college was no joke. So I was struggling with weights, and he weighed about 250, 260 pounds. You know how GP is. And he owned the paint, let's just put it this way. Like,
he owned you at the same time.
Oh yeah. I was his little I don't know if I can say it, but I was his little bitch.
You can say anything.
he would take me everywhere with him, and we had another Lithuanian, Justas Mikučionis, I believe, at the time over there too. He came with me. So he really took care of us. He really took care of us. And, you know, from classes, from helping with everything, he did an amazing job with me. And I'm very grateful for him. Until this day, I say that, you know, there's quite a few people that impacted my life, and JP is definitely one of them.
Yeah, that's it's certainly good for you to acknowledge that. Not many people do when they look back. A lot of people don't even reflect on that, you know, who impact their paths. But the mentorship early on in the career of especially international students going over to the States, whether it's high school, junior college, whatever, it's so important to land on both feet and not just to get like one leg, you know, being behind, because you're always going to play catch up. And then at the end of the day, you either gonna flunk out or you're just gonna end up going back to Europe, and then you're playing catch up, you know. So that mentorship, those people are very important. And I'm sure now where you're at, you're also finding yourself in a similar mentorship role, which we're gonna talk about later a little bit. But I also read one thing that I got goosebumps a little bit when I read it, and I would like to talk about a little bit how that came about when your senior night at Texas A&M, and your mom came all the way from Lithuania, and how did that come about? If for people who didn't know the story, and you having let's put it mildly, a pretty good game.
I was in the study hall, and I remember one of the coaches came up to me and like, we're going to bring your mom to the senior night. I'm like, what? No, I don't have any money to pay for the ticket or anything like that. No. There's some sort of a rule or whatever it was that we were allowed to fly the parents over. And it was I only have my mom in my life. So they flew her over and she stayed with me. She lived in my apartment because I moved into my girlfriend at the time. Now she's my wife, Amanda, to her place. And, you know, for 3 days, 4 days, she was there. She would watch us practice shoot, watch me get cussed out and, you know, run bleachers and so on. Because my coach didn't care. Like, your mom is here? Good. I'll make it work even harder. You know, he was one of those. And then the game came up and we had him against Missouri, I believe. And they had another Lithuanian in there. His name is on the tip of my tongue, but he played for Nevėžis Kėdainiai. Anyways, I had a pretty good game. And then they gave me a microphone to speak at the end. So that was kind of nerve-wracking, speaking in front of 15,000 people with a lot of emotions.
I bet. Yeah, it's like you probably feel the same emotions right now, speaking in front of 15,000 people and to all my listeners.
Yeah, I mean, public speaking, you know how it is. It's the biggest fear, I guess.
Well, it's for some people, it is, I guess. But I guess for some people, it comes naturally. And maybe it's also speaking about, like, we can talk about this as well. I mean, I like public speaking always. I grew up being open, and I'm generally an open person, and I don't mind. I actually enjoy public speaking. I enjoy speaking in front of groups, and maybe it has to do also of where I grew up. You know, I didn't grow up in Lithuania. I grew up in Germany, and I feel a little bit. I feel less restrained. You know, like I feel like when I meet more people from my age or a little bit older from Lithuania. I don't want to generalize, but there is a lot of hesitation in terms of like expressing yourself and being open to new people in your life. And I always felt the opposite. I felt like I could be myself anywhere I went to until I got exposed to this, you know, that there is a certain type of fear involved. And I don't know where like you shouldn't be afraid to speak publicly, because it's actually your personality that you can show, and you can take the chance to show to everybody, you know, of being yourself and showing, presenting your best side and your natural side, because the authenticity comes out immediately, you know. And I've tried to be authentic in public speaking because that comes across naturally, and you can reach people automatically on a different light.
I believe it's a lot to do with how you were raised. If your parents are not, if you're talking and your parents don't interrupt and don't shut you down, it's very important. Then the kids get confident speaking in front of adults and being able to be heard. And if you, you know, in my case, where it would be like, just stop talking or be quiet, you know, at the point. So you kind of, you become shy. You're afraid to say something. You, even though if you have something good to say, you'd probably just keep it to yourself. And the whole speaking in front of, you know, authority or in front of a lot of people, I believe it comes from how you were raised. If your parents allow you to speak up and listen to you and don't interrupt you, I feel like you're going to have that confidence, because it's going to be natural for you. And if you're a kid that, you know, were always put down, stay quiet, don't talk, don't interrupt grown-ups, you know, all of that, it would really be hurtful in the future for him.
I totally agree. It is a child's surroundings at that time, especially in adolescence time. And I was fortunate really to be also around people who just let me be myself. And you don't get judged. I mean, maybe I did get judged behind my back, but it never get like really, like you said, put in your place. You just actually can be yourself, and you can discover yourself as you grow up, and your personality shows, and your friendship, your friends circle develops. And it's really, you can separate, you know, of who you can be with, who you can't be with. And I feel like the culture you grew up in, where in Lithuania, I felt like also it's an authoritarian structure. In like when I worked on coaching staffs, you know, like the superior is a superior, and there's like a hierarchy, a very strict mm-hmm. hierarchy system in most organizations. But you feel the difference between the roles, you know, whereas in Germany or Western cultures, there is a hierarchy, but it's in the States also, it's much more fluid, you know, where everybody can speak up and everybody can have a voice. And then you can also take their opinion for what it is and not necessarily of who it comes from, but what it's actually about. So right. I feel like that also, that's like as well as who you grew up with around, but also where you grew up and what culture you grew up in. That's the biggest takeaway I have, because I was fortunate enough to see lots of different cultures in my background, and you can see the differences because I'm also a person who reflects a lot. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not everybody likes to go back too far in the past, but I like to dig deep.
you could also say that when I grew up, it was Soviet Union. So it was communism. It was suppression of itself. So,
yeah.
You know, people could feel suppressed, and the suppression they needed to let out on someone else. And, you know, like you said, going down the steps, there always would be somebody that would be like, just quiet, don't talk, you know, shut up.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's part of it as well. So
absolutely. Even in the 90s, where it's not the Soviet Union anymore, but you still have the leftovers there in the
structure. Oh, yeah, the mentality still stayed.
Yeah, you can't. It doesn't go.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
So I wanted to also dig a little bit deeper of your past, of when you left college and you came to Europe. You had an American influence already, as you had your girlfriend at Texas A&M, Amanda, right? Mm-hmm. And you came over together at the in the beginning to Panionios, or
no? She had one more year of school, and I went to Panionios, Greece, in Athens, and I played there for 1 year. Then we got married the following year, which kind of worked out because I made money, you know, for the wedding and so on and so on. And then she got married straight up out of college, and I got, you know, married 1 year after pro, and then we moved to Kavala, Greece, where I played my second season. And yeah, I remember she got there before I came back from the training camp. And I remember opening the door and we kind of looked at each other like, what now? You know, like our life begins now. It's not the honeymoon. It's not the summer that, you know, the summer that we spent together, but when I opened the door and I walked through the apartment and kind of looked at it, she was smiling and like, what now? Like, our life begins. Like, let's put this together, you know. So
I can imagine. It's intercultural relationships and international relationships have even more challenges to them than people can imagine, because of the, you know, you have two different backgrounds, two different countries, two different mentalities coming together and trying to build a common future. Did you feel an affinity to either one of the countries, or where you felt like you would like to live after your career? Like, I mean, like, that's, you know, 10 years ahead, still, you know, thinking about retirement later. But at that time, right. Do you guys already consider where you would live together after the career is over?
She was very open. I think she never really traveled international before. And I asked her one time, like, honey, like, I'm taking you all over this, you know, Europe and all of that. I'm like, are you okay with that? Like, are you okay? Because not a lot of people can take that. She looks at me like, you serious? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm kind of worried that, you know. She goes, no. It's like, when else would I travel like that? Where else would I, you know, experience different cultures? Where else would I meet all these people from, you know, different backgrounds? She's like, I love it. This is great. And I was like, holy shit, that's awesome, man. So, and then I always knew I wanted to be a coach. I think when I got a taste of college basketball, I knew I wanted to be a college coach, just because of how many people helped me through it and matured me. I wanted to do the same for the kids. And I knew that if I have good enough career, I can be impactful. And I feel like basketball gave me so much in life that it is my duty to give back and teach kids, you know, because we have you know, 18-year-old kids in a grown bodies.
Yeah.
You know, so they think they're men, but not really. So they, you know, make dumb decisions, which is normal. Everybody, you know, goes through it and learns it, but it's the really dumb decisions that you want them not to make.
Yes, yes. And that's one thing about college that I always look back on is the campus life, the you know, the people you meet every day, you get to hang out and just meet random people. And this, the vibe on campus, on an American college campus is just completely different. It's, you know, people have to live through it to really know what we're talking about. So I cherished those memories a lot, even though when I was in the South as well, it was pretty humid and hot outside, so it's not much like once the summer came, it was you're looking for the next air conditioner.
Yeah, you literally would jump from air conditioning to air conditioner. Yeah. But once you get used to it, it wasn't bad. I mean, we had, you know, 100 degree weather and humid as hell. We just, in the summers at that point, we didn't have team workouts, so you would lift weights on your own. It was optional but mandatory. Yeah. You know, so we would lift weights, go to class, and basically just hop onto the pool parties, you know, so cool ourselves off. So that was definitely a great time. Yeah.
Talking about the really stupid decisions in college, I could tell a story maybe for another time, but I can touch on that. I was off campus, and I had a little jail story to tell that I always tell at the cocktail stories. But as always, I'm innocent, so got through it okay. But I was really that's a conversation for another time. But it was a pretty scary situation. But it's also, like you said, it's, you know, dumb decisions lead to really dumb results. So did you have any kind of regrets from college that you really can maybe share?
Regrets? Not really. I was a shy kid. I was really shy. I wasn't myself until I turned 27 or so. You know, like I was like my Amanda says I had 12 different husbands, you know. So you would change your looks, you know, from short hair to long hair to beard to whatever. And the way you were acting was a little bit differently too. So with a little more and more success, I would get a little bit more and more confident. Like I wasn't trying to be cocky. I knew what's the difference between being cocky and confident.
Yeah.
You know, I might have not succeeded all the time, but I tried to do my best. And so my Amanda said, you're like an onion, you know, there's always a new layer of you. There's always a new layer.
Which is good.
You're
evolving as a person, and as a you know, as a player, you're evolving. I think false confidence is probably the worst thing, where sometimes it can lead to success where it's but it's not sustainable. But there's such thing as like a hollow confidence where you haven't accomplished anything, but you're really walking around like $1 million, you know. And there's something to that as well that you can draw from that makes people even better incrementally. But when you have a realistic view and you feel like, you know, your insecurities start showing, when you feel like I haven't accomplished anything, I don't have a reason to be overly confident. So let's stay humble here and let's work to have something to show for, and then I can maybe be also show that confidence and live it, you know. And I think that's the biggest challenge for young people. That's where mentorship comes in. I really like college mentorship, and growing confidence over time is probably one of the more important things for a college student, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Going back, now you're in a safe place. Let's say you're not in Europe, but let's talk about the transition from Ritos to Žalgiris, where you had. I don't want to dig too deep in that, but I wanted to know, because I understand the scrutiny you have to live with, but for people to understand maybe to what scrutiny you had to live through the first year of transferring to EuroLeague team to the biggest rival, let's say, And it's basically going from Duke to North Carolina, if that's, you know, for in America, to put it in American terms, to be safe. But is what was the first year like for you in that when you come back to that old place and the scrutiny you had to deal with and fighting through that? Because I'm sure it made you also stronger as a player and as a person.
Well, I did that to myself, basically. You know, when so going back to it, to the famous comment, I will never ever play for Žalgiris, right? Even though it was cut, because I said I'll never play for Žalgiris because I'll be too old by the time my contract expires. But I guess people seem to forget that part, and got, you know, the message of the headlines. But going back is when we won the silver medal in the European Championships, you know, and all the Žalgiris boys were, you know, like kind of sticking a knife up into my heart, like, oh, you used to be second, you used to be second, you know, this is nothing new for you. So, it kind of hurt a little bit. But at the same time, obviously, we were happy because we did something incredible that year. And coming back, it's literally 3 days later that I made that comment. And I paid for it. And, you know, everybody got upset or for whatever reasons. And, you know, the season played out the way it did. And I didn't see a reason why it would. One team will try to get rid of me or trade me or whatever, but it's up to them. And when Žalgiris learned about that, they, you know, there were talks, there were, you know, nothing serious, but I think we were already in the Rio Olympics that, you know, my agent started calling me and like, look, this is looking promising and so on and so on. And so we made a change. And I went to Žalgiris, and of course it was an easy decision, just because for, you know, the past team and you know, my comment, obviously, like I knew what people's reactions gonna be harsh. But when I got to Kaunas, there was so much support that I didn't expect. Like I wasn't afraid, but I was uncomfortable walking around in the city.
Yeah,
you know, I was uncomfortable going to the mall or to the restaurants because you always, you know, have some of those looks. Or I thought I would, but people from Kaunas, they welcomed me with open arms. You know, they said everything's okay, you know, they shook my hand, like, we're happy you're here. And I'm talking about fans, I'm not talking about the organization, which is totally different level than anybody else that I've been a part of. And so I was shocked because I wasn't expecting that. Yes, I got some comments, you know, oh well, but majority of them were welcome. Mm-hmm. And they were very welcoming, you know. So it was definitely not what I was expecting.
Yeah, it's like the decision making process is always, you know, you always keep going back and forth between what's right, what's wrong. At the end, you have to decide what's best for your career and your future, and then, you know, taking the next step was obviously that. So I think that it was probably more dealing with Rita's fans than with Žalgiris, you know, welcome you with open arms. But it seems like everything at the end, history, you know, like it the first year, the first 2 years are difficult, but afterwards it's you know, like you people forget about it, or they don't even really make a big deal out of it because it's sports, you know. It's passionate in Europe, it's life, and it's a form of really expressing yourself. But at the end of the day, it's human people, humans who are making decisions for their lives, for their families, for their futures. So I think it should be accepted. Whatever you decide, it should be accepted and dealt with.
Definitely. Well, the thing about Rita's fans, I completely understand them. I mean, it's, they felt betrayal, and which is great because it meant that I meant to those fans something. You know what I mean? Yeah. They were hurtful because I meant something for them. And obviously they weren't told the whole truth because, you know, Rita's being Rita's and owning a newspaper, they could write anything they want. So they weren't told the whole truth. They had no idea what was going on. So I was made into a bad guy, which is fine. I mean, I took it, whatever, you know, let's move on. But yeah, as you mentioned, the first game was definitely a nerve-wracking and more than any others. But I felt like at any game that you're nervous before, as soon as you step on a court, as soon as the ball goes up, everything disappears. Like you just live within those lines, you know, the sideline and the baseline. And only thing I remember that kind of threw me off is when I was shooting free throws and I got, you know, coins and lighters and whatever else they had thrown at me from the fans. It was just somebody counted. They said it was like 82 cents or something like that. And I'm like, really? That's all? That's all I was worth? But yeah.
Do you talk about the, you know, when everything else goes away, when you're on the court, do you miss that? Do you miss playing, going back to those times? Because it's always, you know, people underestimate who have never played, but it's a very special, special place to be on.
Yeah. I definitely miss that. I miss the camaraderie we had in the locker room. The little jokes we would make to each other that, you know, always stays in the locker room, like a locker room talk, and always trying to, you know, give somebody hell or something like that, or talk about practice, or knowing our coach at the time in Žalgiris, he would always say something funny, but not at the moment, you know, like he would make a remark of some sort or whatever that you can't really laugh at it during practice, but you would come back to the locker room and it's just somebody would mention it and everybody's dying, you know. And that's what was great about Žalgiris locker room is that everybody, you know, from the youngins to Jankūnas, you know, everybody was on the same page. Everybody was, you know, nobody was excluded out of anything. It was great.
That's I can totally relate to that. That's the biggest thing. And you're fortunate, like all the guys I will talk to in this retirement series, is that you guys got to play to the very end of your careers, through your career, even though you had some injuries here and there, but you still managed to play all the way through. Where I look back at it, you know, and I just like still like I'm at the age of where I would be retired by now probably, but you didn't get to finish the job, you know, you didn't get to finish and get the whole experience. But when was the first thought for you that it's getting close? Do you remember?
I think the year that we went to the Final Four was Žalgiris. Like, I knew my contract is expiring. I had no idea what was going to happen, even though I resigned right after Final Four. But going, you know, if we didn't have two practices a day, or it would be 2 days before the game, whatever, I'd go home. And that 1 hour trip, it would be a lot of thinking, the hour between Kaunas and Vilnius. There would be a lot of thinking. And what I did, I was going through different scenarios in my head. And so that way, when one of them comes true, I already know what to do. So it doesn't take me by surprise. And, you know, I resigned for another year. Great. I was, you know, started off shaky, then started playing well. Then out of nowhere, I had this mystery, a hernia, you know, whatever. I had to have a surgery. 3 weeks later, I was on the floor playing Kimki. And, you know, then more injuries followed because, I wasn't ready physically, and there's nothing to do with, you know, people that are trying to get me ready. It just happens with old age and in basketball, it just happens. So again, a lot of injuries, a lot of, you know, going back and forth. And when you're older, and as the players are going to tell you, getting back into shape, it takes a lot longer. Mm-hmm. You know, so it just like keep going constantly. And by the time I was back into normal self, we were already almost in the finals of Lithuanian League. So I just like, you know what, I will understand if, let's say, Žalgiris want to resign me because they had somebody else they were looking at. And I was at the beach, Huntington Beach in California, with my wife when I heard the news that they will not be resigning me. And I'm like, all right, well, let's just retire. I mean, you know, it's like, if we're going to move somewhere, if we're not going to play for the same team, let's just retire. Let's just move back where kids are comfortable, where the family is comfortable. You know, if we're going to move, let's just make this one move now and, you know, let's work from it. And I had an invitation to the national team with Adomaitis. And I think he was the first one to know that I was retiring, because he called me and I'm like, coach, sorry, I'm not seeing playing basketball in the future. And he goes, really? I'm like, yeah. He goes, the team that he coached through the year, he goes, well, my management wanted me to talk to you about coming back. And I'm like, no, going back, man. I'm not going back. I just can't do that. I can't do that. You know, whatever. A year or two, I don't think it would be worth of. It just wouldn't feel right. You know, it wouldn't feel right. And I felt like this is the chapter that I need to close. And, you know, I closed it with a smile on my face and with the peace in my heart.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was a decision. It was a great decision to be made at the time.
Yeah, for people who don't know the history, Adomaitis was coaching Ritas at that time, so it would have been a gigantic step again in the other direction back on the highway. So it's definitely understandable. And I was wondering if you thought, you know, because some players, even though they cannot play at the highest level of their capabilities, would you still would have considered, you know, playing in another country or for another team? But obviously, even if it wasn't Ritas who was interested in bringing you back, was that not an option at all?
There wasn't anything against, you know, all the teams that are, let's say, below, mm-hmm. you know, level of Žalgiris. There's nothing against it. I just felt like I wanted to stop at the high point where I don't regress, mm-hmm. you know, because you see a lot of players that just regress and go bounce to lower level teams and so on and so on. Just didn't feel like I could do that. I mean, you know, when I retired, I put this post on Instagram and I used a movie quote from American Gangster. The quote is, quitting while you're ahead is not the same as quitting.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
And for me, it was just like, you know what, this is it. I mean, and like I said, it was peace in my heart and a smile on my face, and probably with some sort of a drink on the beach.
Some sort. Well, it sounds like it's well, if I would put myself in your shoes, I think that's the perfect decision at that time, the timing of it and the whole, mm-hmm. you know, not going through the growing pains of moving your family to a different city and adapting yourself again. And then you're already like, I think you also want to be able to play with your kids at a healthy body and not to be deteriorated, you know. So I think that goes into account as well. But were you already interested in like you said, you want always wanted to coach. You knew you wanted to coach, but you did you have a path after the playing career finished? Did you have a path of coaching or your current job? How did you come about? How did it come about?
I had no idea what was going to happen. I obviously reached out to Coach Forbes, the head coach of Wake Forest men's basketball team at the small wing. But before he was at the East Tennessee State University, and he said, I'd give you a job, but I just don't have any openings on my staff. And that's how it was. And obviously, I completely understood that. And there was one job open, but I needed to get a worker's permit, and I didn't have it at the time because my immigration status was a tourist, and I could not work, and so it didn't work. It didn't work out, even though it was a high mid-major team. It didn't pan out, which is it gave me a year to work on my immigration status, and I had to get my green card, and I had to get my worker's permit, and there was a lot of paperwork, books and books of paperwork that you had to fill out with the lawyer. And again, my wife, and she did an amazing job. She just basically took care of it. All I had to do was sign. I was training some kids, from the area, and they're like, oh, would you work me out? I'm like, yeah, sure. Would you work me out? Yeah, sure. And then the preparations for the seasons that when I was playing, I was working out with this trainer that they prepared football players and baseball players and basketball players. So we had a 3-year relationship, and they go, well, I have some kids, they want, if you want to work them out, they'll probably pay you. I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, I wasn't doing this for the money, but I'm not going to say no, obviously. And I worked them out for about 2 months, and their coach from a homeschool organization quit. Mm-hmm. And the people on the board, they called me, goes, we want to interview for the head coaching job at the homeschool basketball team. And I'm like, okay. So I made a resume. I came to meet them. We talked a little bit, and I guess they liked me enough where they're like, okay, go ahead. So, all right, now. And it was right at Christmas time. I'm like, holy shit, like, what am I doing? I'm about to be a head coach of basically a high school team. I know nothing about coaching, but all right, let's see how it works out, And then I just kind of pieced my philosophy, obviously, a lot of my previous coaches, and the two ones that the most stand out was Ramūnas Būtautas and Šarūnas Jasikevičius, just because I played, he was the recent coach. So, and I, went in there, and it just kind of went smoothly. And I'm like, all right, this is fun. Like, this is when I knew that I love basketball, but I was made for coaching. Yeah. Like, this, the high that I got from it, it was totally different, different. And, we had great success. I think we ranked number 7 in the country by the time COVID hit. And we were going to do something special, but unfortunately.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, I think, for a lot of teams, right? Not only like high school, college, any
team. Oh, yeah, for sure, definitely.
It was unfortunate for a lot of teams, but that's a subject I think it's been beaten up on, so let's not get too much into it. I think we all understand the significance of it. Yeah. The purity of coaching kids and coaching and getting the gratification from their success and their appreciation for your dedication, you know, because they, the kids are the most honest students that you can have. You know, they see that if you're dedicated or not, they see how much love and passion you put in it. And that's, you know, like you said, it's not necessarily about the money at that point. It's really just having the human connection with the player and helping him to get better and reaching the next level. And then, you know, years from then, they look back and they come, and when they come and they say thanks and appreciate it, and that's really that leaves a mark on you, I think, on your life.
It definitely does. It definitely does. Speaking of which, we had a basketball player that got inducted to Texas A&M, my college that I went to, a Hall of Fame, and majority of the team was there for him. And the head coach that was at the time was there too. And, you know, when all the official stuff was done, we went out and had some drinks. And I remember sitting with my coach and having drinks with him. And coach was just smiling. I'm like, coach, are you okay? He goes, you don't understand, but this is probably the happiest I've been in years.
Yeah.
And seeing all of those guys seemed and being successful, not just in basketball.
Yeah.
But in life. Period, you know, and I looked at it and like, oh my God, this is great, man. This is something that you want to live for, you know. And I gave him a hug, you know, and I thanked him, obviously. And so he was just very, very happy person.
Yeah, it's really, I'm an emotional person too. So I love these kind of emotional connections you make through these, you know, times and the trials and tribulations, because you have some bad times in on teams as well, you know, but you're really the bond. And like you said, you missed the locker room from playing times. Those locker rooms, every locker room has a special vibe to it, you know. And there's this book, Tribe, that I read, and I, you know, where you feel like you feel alone if you don't find the people that you can surround yourself with daily, and they give you a purpose, you know, that what's like when coaching, you find a purpose through that tribe, you know, as a player, you find a purpose through your teammates, through that tribe and within that tribe. And it's significant. You can find those examples in any, not only sports, you know, in any kind of organization. So it's not necessarily just sports, but in sports, there's a lot more emotions involved because of the highs and lows, the adrenaline, and there's a lot more bondage going on throughout the course of the seasons. That's why these moments are so important for coaches. How did you go about now being in the position you're at right now at Wake Forest as a director of player development?
Yeah, so I got all of the, you know, immigration papers taken care of relatively fast. And, you know, coach was actually flew into Dallas because he wanted to go see one of the kids that was playing for a junior college. And I'm like, I'll just drive you there. So, you know, I took him and he watched the kid and we drove back. And he said, you know, he'll help me with anything, obviously, because there was always a mutual friendship that we, because he was the guy that recruited me from junior college to Texas A&M. I probably forgot to mention that. But, and he stayed on staff for a year and we always had that connection. And he kept up, you know, during my career, and he would always text me with text, you know, Facebook Messenger and so on and so on. And we kept in touch. So, you know, there was a bond with him already. And Danny Manning got fired from Wake Forest. And I had no idea that, you know, Coach Forbes could get a job, especially during pandemic where nobody was firing anybody, you know. And then as soon as Coach Forbes got the job, when I saw it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he called me at 10 o'clock and he goes, you're coming with me.
Awesome.
Right. And at that point I was in talks with, the Pelicans, New Orleans Pelicans for the same position. And we agreed and I already talked to Mr. Griffin and, I don't know, if you know Bryson Graham, he's the assistant general manager over there. Yep. So he was my teammate on my college team. And so we also kept in touch and he wanted me to come there and we agreed verbally, but it was supposed to be from the beginning of this season, which was in December. But Wake Forest offered me, you know, now, basically. And I called Bryson. He goes, I know what you're calling about. he goes, I know what you're about to say. And I'm like, man, I'm sorry. You know, it's just the way it's working out, you know, and college route is that I always wanted to go. And I'm very fortunate to have this position and be here.
Yeah. And that goes back again, like the bonds you create throughout the season while you were a player with the assistant coach and you stayed in touch, he stayed in touch. Mm-hmm. And it's the bond that really keeps you, it's a genuine bond if it stays that, you know, for that long, you know, otherwise mm-hmm. it would wear off or it would just really mellow down. But it shows really that there's a genuine friendship and trust, you know, in order to bring you, because it's just not, you know, not that you can hire anybody out of the blue. So I feel like that network part sometimes gets not underrated because it's very in presence in their mind, but it gets distorted because people also network just to network and not to really have a genuine connection, genuine friendship with somebody to see if it works out, if it doesn't work out, you know, because you just don't, it's about the people you surround yourself with daily on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis in the job. Yeah. Because when the shit hits the fan, you really want the right people around you and not be feeling like there's distrust. You know, you want the right people that, you know, you can talk openly with and have these kind of honest conversations with about the situation. And I think that that's also the reason he brought you.
Could be. You're going to have to ask him.
Well, what are your main what is your main job right now with the organization? What's your daily bread that you have to do in order to improve the organization?
Well, as of right now, it's whatever the assistant coaches or the coach needs me to do. You know, so it's not, you know, something structural that I need to do this. No, it's just whatever I'm asked to do. Yeah. What I have to do when it comes to player development, you know, it's showing videos, you know, breaking down the videos, breaking down the game, showing a little bit of, you know, how they can improve, you know, the workouts. Sometimes in the workouts, like you get to show them just being from player's perspective.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And teaching them like how to do it better or how it would be easier to do it the right way, you know. So it's a lot of everything. It's just, you know, but as right now in the summer, we don't really have much time with them, and NCAA rules prohibited a lot of contact with them. It's, you know, just whatever coaches need me to, and recruiting, of course. You always have to recruit. So you always have to recruit, and recruiting is being a big part of it. And, you know, especially keeping up with the players from overseas and Lithuania and, you know, the Serbians and so on and so on. And obviously in Germany, there's a lot of good players. So it's always looking for someone to that can help you, you know, win, and you can help the team.
Yeah, it's recruiting, I think, is the biggest part in college.
Getting
the right players to your program and getting the best players possible to your program, mm-hmm. and, you know, because the competition is fierce. So I'm sure there is mm-hmm. a lot of tough questions and a lot of tough recruitment trips to be had.
One good thing is that everybody plays basketball, so there is talent all over the place. You know, and you you have to find it, and then you got to connect with those people in a way where they can trust you by coming to you.
Yeah.
You know, you got to connect with the player, you got to connect with the parents, you got to connect with the, you know, whoever else helps them make the decision. And I feel like the connection is what brings a lot of it together.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There's basketball being played. It's a global game now. It's not like it was 20 years ago when we were in college. It changed dramatically. I mean, it was back then it was played, but it's not as globally accessible as it is now. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a different world we're living in, and that also it makes the recruitment, because there's such a big pool also to really find the right, the key player to make a difference. Wake Forest, when I was in college in the States during my time, that was, you know, I went there a little bit before you went, a couple years before. There is a rich history from that time of Lithuanians in Wake Forest, mm-hmm. Especially with, you know, Songaila and Danielius, who's maybe mm-hmm. lesser known to the average fan. But I was wondering how much there is still like the identification of Lithuanians of Songaila and Danielius at Wake Forest.
Well, first of all, Songaila's picture is right around the corner. Okay, the Olympians, the Demon Deacon Olympians. You know, Songaila is right there from 2012 picture, and there's a lot of people that still work here when Darius was part of this team. And they love him. I have not heard, you know, anything bad about Darius. Oh my God, he's such a great guy. He's such a good competitor. There's just some other days they told me where in practice he got hit, one of his tooth popped out. He put the tooth down and I said, save it for later, and just kept on practicing. You know, just like a tough dude. And knowing him personally, that I played with, played against, and played for him when he was an assistant coach, all of the stories that I hear, you know, it's like, wow, it just paints a big picture, you know, just like this little details where you can see, like, yeah, I can definitely tell. Oh yeah, I can see that too, you know.
So it's coming together, the layers.
Oh, yeah. You know, all the puzzle and everything is definitely coming together, and people love him over here. You know, he was great over here, and they were really appreciative of him.
Yeah, and also, you know, Danielius was a little bit younger than him, but he was up and coming at that time. Like, I remember him also not being, just because he was a little bit younger, he was a little bit behind Darius, mm-hmm. in terms of like statistical impact and team. But the energy he was playing with. Danielius was just unfortunate with some injuries, and just mm-hmm. the career didn't turn out the way everybody hoped for. I'm sure he hoped for as well, but it was definitely also a name to remember for the program, because he was definitely special at that time. Don't get me wrong,
I hear his name around a lot too. I mean, yeah, you know, there's like, oh, we had Lithuanians, you know, they're not always, obviously Songaila is probably, they talk the most just because he played in NBA for 8 years or so.
Yeah.
But I hear Danielis' name all the time as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So now after a 20-year gap, there is another Lithuanian at Wake Forest.
There's another Lithuanian. Yeah. Now we just got to get a Lithuanian player in here too.
Well, Antanas or AK, Tony Montana or whatever. I wanted to say thank you for joining this podcast, and I think we had a really broad conversation about different parts of your career, and mainly about the retirement phase that I wanted to touch on mostly. Is there one advice that you would want to give to current players that are contemplating about retirement, or are thinking, or have recently retired?
Follow your heart, man. Think it over and follow your heart. I mean, I'm sure the players that are going to retire, they have families. So, you know, when you have a family, you have to look what's best, not just for you, but for the family as well. Yeah. So just, you know, think it over and follow your heart and make sure you're happy with the decision you're making. And you got to be the one that's making the decision. Don't let somebody else make the decision for you. Otherwise, you might regret it and you might blame that person. So just kind of follow your heart, man.
Beautiful, yeah. Be honest to yourself, basically. Be honest to yourself.
Exactly.
All right, Antanas, thanks a lot. And I think we didn't embarrass ourselves with our English. we did a great job. All right, thanks a lot. And everybody else, follow Wake Forest and follow Antanas' career, his second career, second life after his playing career.
Thank you. Thank you, Benes.
Bye.